found D'Artagnan, who, instead of being ill, was running to his horse. They stopped him on the threshold of the door. "Hullo! Where the plague are you going in this manner?" cried Athos. "It is he!" exclaimed D'Artagnan, pale with passion, and with the perspiration in beads on his brow. "It is he! Let me get at him!" "But who do you mean?" demanded Athos. "He! That man!" "What man? That cursed man, my evil genius, whom I have always seen when I was threatened with some misfortune. He who accompanied that horrible woman when I met her the first time. He whom I was seeking when I affronted our friend Athos. He whom I saw the very morning of the day when Madame Bonacieux was abducted. The man of Meung, in fact. I saw him. It is he. I recognized him when the wind opened his cloak."
"The devil!" said Athos, musing.
"To horse, gentlemen, to horse! Let us pursue him! We must catch him!"
"My dear fellow," said Aramis, "consider that he is going exactly the opposite road to ours, that he has a fresh horse, whilst our horses are done, and that consequently we should knock up our horses without even a chance of overtaking him."
"Hullo, sir!" cried out a stable boy, running after the stranger. "Hullo, sir! Here is a paper which fell out of your hat! Hullo, sir! Hullo!"
"My friend," said D'Artagnan, "half a pistole for that paper?"
"Faith, sir, with the greatest pleasure. Here it is."
The stable boy, delighted with the good day's work he had made of it, returned into the yard of the hotel, and D'Artagnan unfolded the paper.
"Well?" inquired his friends, listening.
"Only one word," said D'Artagnan.
"Yes," said Aramis, "but that word is the name of a town."
"Armentières," read Porthos.
"Armentières? I do not know the place."
"And this name of a town is written in her hand," said Athos.
"Come, come, let us take great care of this paper," said D'Artagnan. "Perhaps I shall not have thrown away my half-pistole. To horse, my friends, to horse!"
The four companions went off at a gallop on the road to Béthune. 61. The Carmelite Convent of Béthune. Great criminals are endowed with a kind of predestination, which enables them to surmount every obstacle, and to escape every danger, until the moment on which a wearied providence has fixed for the shipwreck of their unhallowed fortunes. Thus was it with her ladyship. She passed between the cruisers of two nations, and landed at Boulogne without mishap. When she disembarked at Portsmouth, her ladyship had been an Englishwoman, driven from Rochelle by the persecutions of France. When she came on shore at Boulogne, after a voyage of 2 days, she represented herself as a Frenchwoman, whom the English annoyed at Portsmouth, on account of the hatred which they entertained for France. Her ladyship had, moreover, the best of passports, beauty, aided by the liberality with which she scattered her pistoles. Freed from the customary formalities by the affable smile and gallant manners of an old governor of the port who kissed her hands, she only remained at Boulogne a sufficient time to put into the post a letter written in these terms. To His Eminence the Lord Cardinal Richelieu, at his camp before La Rochelle. My Lord, Your Eminence may be assured that His Grace the Duke of Buckingham will not set out for France. Lady de Blanc. Boulogne, August 25th, evening. P.S. According to Your Eminence's desire, I am proceeding to the Carmelite Convent at Béthune, where I shall await your orders. In fact, her ladyship began her journey on the same night. Darkness overtook her, and she stopped and slept at a tavern on the road. At 5 o'clock the next morning she resumed her journey, and in 3 hours reached Béthune. She inquired her way to the convent of the Carmelites, and immediately entered it. The abbess came to meet her, and when her ladyship showed the cardinal's order, a chamber was immediately prepared for her, and breakfast served. The scenes of the past had all faded from this woman's sight, and, with her eyes fixed upon the future, she only saw the high fortune which was reserved for her by that cardinal whom she had so well served, without his name being at all compromised by the bloody deed. The ever-changing passions which consumed her gave to her life the appearance of the clouds which ascend into the sky, reflecting sometimes the azure tint, sometimes the lurid, and sometimes the blackness of the storm, yet leaving no traces but those of devastation and of death. After breakfast, the abbess came to pay her a visit. There are but few amusements in the cloister,
and the good superior was in haste to strike up acquaintance with her new boarder. Her ladyship wished to please the abbess, and this was a very easy task for a woman so truly superior. She endeavoured to be amiable, and became charming, so that her entertainer was seduced by her varied conversation, as well as by the grades which appeared in all her person. The abbess, who was of a noble family, loved more especially that gossip of the court, which so rarely reaches the extremities of the kingdom, and which has, especially, so much difficulty in passing through the walls of a convent, on whose threshold all worldly sounds should cease. Her ladyship, however, was well versed in all the intrigues of the aristocracy, in whose midst she had constantly lived for 5 or 6 years. She therefore set about amusing the good abbess with an account of all the worldly practices of the French court, mixed up with the excessive devotions of the king. She gave her also the chronicle of scandals concerning those lords and ladies of the court with whose names the abbess was familiar, and touched lightly on the amours of the queen and Buckingham, talking herself a great deal that she might thus induce the abbess to talk a little. But the abbess contented herself with listening and smiling without replying. Nevertheless, as her ladyship perceived that these sort of stories amused her greatly, she continued them, only she diverted the conversation to the cardinal. On this point, however, she was slightly embarrassed, as she knew not whether the abbess was royalist or cardinalist. She therefore kept prudently to a middle path. The abbess, on her part, maintained a still more prudent reserve, contenting herself with making a profound inclination of the head as often as the traveller mentioned the cardinal's name. Her ladyship soon began to think that she should find this convent very tiresome. She resolved, therefore, to hazard something in order to know what course to steer. Wishing to ascertain how far the discretion of the abbess would extend, she began to speak unfavourably, at first by hints, and then most circumstantially, of the cardinal, relating the amours of that minister with Madame d'Aiguillon, Marianne de Lorme, and some other women of gallantry. The abbess listened more attentively, gradually became more animated, and smiled. "Good," thought her ladyship, "she begins to relish my conversation. If she is a cardinalist, she is, at any rate, no very fanatical one." She then dwelt upon the persecution which the cardinal conducted against his enemies. The abbess merely crossed herself without approving or blaming. This confirmed her ladyship in the belief that the good superior was more of a royalist than a cardinalist, so she continued her remarks, becoming more and more severe. "I am very ignorant on all such matters," said the abbess at last, "but remote as we are from the court, secluded as we find ourselves from intercourse with the world, we have most melancholy proofs of the truth of what you have been just relating. And one of our boarders has suffered severely from the vengeance and persecutions of the cardinal." "One of your boarders?" said her ladyship. "Oh, poor creature, how I pity her!" "And you are right, for she is much to be pitied. Imprisonment, threats, ill-treatment, all these she has endured. But after all," continued the abbess, "the cardinal had perhaps plausible reasons for acting thus, and although she has the aspect of an angel, we must not always judge of people by their aspects." "Good," said her ladyship to herself. "Who knows? I may perhaps make some discovery here. I am just in the humour for it." She then set herself to communicate to her countenance an expression of most perfect candour. "Alas," said she, "I know that. They tell us that we must not trust physiognomies. But what can we trust to, if not to the most beautiful of the Lord's works? As for me, I shall probably be deceived throughout my whole life, for I always confide in that person whose face inspires me with sympathy." "You would be induced, then, to believe that this young woman was innocent?" said the abbess. "The cardinal does not merely punish crimes," replied her ladyship. "There are certain virtues which he visits more severely than sins." "You will allow me, madam, to express my surprise," said the abbess. "At what?" asked her ladyship, with apparent simplicity. "At the language which you use." "And what do you find astonishing in that language?" demanded her ladyship, with a smile. "You are the cardinal's friend, since he has sent you here, and yet I speak ill of him," replied her ladyship, expressing the abbess's thought. "At least you do not speak much good of him." "It is because I am not his friend, but his victim," said her ladyship, sighing. "And yet that letter by which he has recommended you to me is an order to me to keep myself in a sort of prison, from which he will remove me through some of his satellites. But why did you not escape? Where should I go? Do you believe that there is a spot upon the earth which the cardinal cannot reach, if he pleases to take the trouble to stretch out his hand? If I were a man, it might perchance be possible, but being a woman, what would you have a woman do? This young boarder of yours, has she attempted to escape? No, truly, but her case is different. I fancy that she is kept in France by some love affair." "Then," said her ladyship with a sigh, "loving, she is not altogether unhappy." "So," said the abbess, looking with increasing interest at her ladyship, "it is another poor persecuted creature that I see?" "Alas, yes," said her ladyship. The abbess looked at her ladyship for an instant with some inquietude, as if a new thought were just arising in her mind. "You are not an enemy of our most holy faith," said she, stammering. "I," cried her ladyship, "I a Protestant? Oh, no! I call the God who now hears us to witness that I am, indeed, a zealous Catholic." "Then, madam," replied the abbess, smiling, "be of good cheer. The house in which you are shall not be a very severe prison to you, and we will do all we can to soften your captivity. Moreover, you shall see that young woman, who is, no doubt, persecuted on account of some court intrigue. She is so amiable and so gracious that she is sure to please you." "What is her name?" "She has been recommended to me under the name of Kitty, by a person of the highest rank. I have not endeavored to find out her second name." "Kitty!" exclaimed her ladyship. "Are you quite sure?" "Yes, madam. At least, so she calls herself. Do you suppose you know her?" Her ladyship smiled as the idea suggested itself to her that this female might possibly be her former attendant. With her recollection of the young woman, there was associated a sentiment of anger and a desire for revenge, which somewhat disturbed the serenity of her ladyship's features. But they soon resumed that expression of calmness and benevolence which this woman with 100 faces had for the time adopted. "But when may I see this young lady, for whom I already feel so great a sympathy?" demanded her ladyship. "This evening," replied the abbess. "Nay, even today. But as you say you have been travelling for 4 days, and arose this morning at 5 o'clock, you must now be in want of rest. Lie down, therefore, and sleep, and we will awake you at dinner-time." Although her ladyship could have very well dispensed with sleep, supported as she was by the excitement which a new adventure kindled in her heart, so eager after intrigues, she nevertheless accepted the offer of the abbess. During the previous 12 or 14 days, she had experienced so many different emotions that though her iron constitution was still able to endure fatigue, her mind required some repose. She therefore took leave of the abbess, and lay down in peace, comforted by the ideas of vengeance to which the name of Kitty had so naturally led her. She remembered the almost unlimited promise which the cardinal had made to her on condition of the success of her enterprise. She had succeeded, and she might therefore avenge herself on D'Artagnan. One thing alone alarmed her ladyship, and that was the recollection of her husband, the Count de la Fère, whom she had believed to be dead, or at least expatriated, and whom she now found in Athos, the dearest friend of D'Artagnan. But if he was D'Artagnan's friend, he must have assisted him in all those plots, by the aid of which the queen had thwarted the designs of his eminence. If he was D'Artagnan's friend, he must be the cardinal's enemy, and she should undoubtedly be able to envelop him in that vengeance, in the folds of which she hoped to stifle the young musketeer. All these hopes formed agreeable thoughts to her ladyship, and, lulled by them, she soon slept. She was awakened by a soft voice which sounded at the foot of her bed. On opening her eyes, she saw the abbess, accompanied by a young woman with fair hair and a delicate complexion, who fixed on her a look full of kindly curiosity. The countenance of this young woman was entirely unknown to her. As they exchanged the usual courtesies, they examined each other with scrupulous attention. Both were very beautiful, yet quite unlike each other in their kinds of beauty, and her ladyship smiled on observing that she had herself much more of a high-bred air and aristocratic manners. It is true that the dress of a novice, which the young woman wore, was not very favourable to success in a competition of the sort. The abbess presented them to one another, and then, as her own duties demanded her attendance in the chapel, she left them alone together. The novice, seeing her ladyship in bed, would have followed the abbess, but her ladyship detained her.
"What, madame," said she, "I have scarcely seen you, and you already wish to deprive me of your company, which I have hoped to enjoy during the time that I may remain here."
"No, madame," replied the novice, "but as you are fatigued, I feared that my visit had been badly timed."
"Well," said her ladyship, "what should those who sleep desire? A pleasant awakening. That is just what you have given me, so let me enjoy it at my ease." And taking her hand, she drew her to a chair near the bed.
"Mon Dieu," said the novice, seating herself, "how unfortunate I am! Here have I been in this house for 6 months without even the shadow of an amusement. You arrive, your presence would provide me with the most charming company, and now, according to all probability, I shall immediately leave the convent."
"What?" said her ladyship. "Are you going away soon?"
"At least I hope so," replied the novice, with an expression of joy which she did not in the least attempt to disguise. "I think I heard that you had suffered from the persecutions of the cardinal," said her ladyship. "That is another bond of sympathy between us. What our good mother has told me is true, then, and you are also one of the cardinal's victims?"
"Hush," said her ladyship. "Even here, do not let us speak of him. All my misfortunes have arisen from having spoken scarcely more than you have just said, before a woman whom I thought my friend, and who betrayed me. And are you also the victim of treachery?"
"No," said the novice, "but of my devotion to a woman whom I loved, for whom I would have died, and for whom I would die now."
"And who deserted you in your distress?"
"I know she did." "I was unjust enough to believe so, but within the last 2 or 3 days I have had proof to the contrary, and I thank God for it. I should have deeply grieved at the conviction that she had forgotten me. But you, madame, you seem to be free and able to escape, if you should have any inclination to do so."
"And where could I go, without friends, without money, in a part of France which I do not know, where—"
"Oh, as to friends," said the novice, "you will find them wherever you please. You look so good, and you are so beautiful."
"That is no reason," said her ladyship, softening her smile so as to give to it an angelical expression, "why I should not be forsaken and persecuted."
"Listen," said the novice, "you must trust in heaven. There always comes a moment when the good that we have done pleads for us before God's throne. Besides, it is perhaps a piece of good fortune for you that, humble and powerless as I am, you should have met me here. For if I should get away, I have some influential friends, who, having exerted themselves for me, may do the same for you."
"Oh, when I say that I was solitary and forsaken," said her ladyship, hoping to make the novice speak more plainly by speaking herself, "it is not that I have not some lofty acquaintances also, but these acquaintances all tremble before the cardinal. The queen herself does not defend me against this terrible minister. And I have proofs that Her Majesty, in spite of her excellent heart, has been more than once obliged to abandon to His Eminence's rage persons who had faithfully served her.
Believe me, madam, it may have appeared that the queen forsook her friends, but we must not believe the appearance. The more they are persecuted, the more she thinks of them. And often, at the very moment when they suppose her the least mindful of them, they receive an evidence of her kind remembrance."
"Alas," said her ladyship, "I believe it. The queen is so good."
"Oh, you know her, then, this beautiful and noble queen, since you speak of her thus?" exclaimed the novice enthusiastically.
"That is to say," replied her ladyship, rather forced back into her entrenchments, "I have not the honour of knowing her personally, but I do know many of her most intimate friends. I know Monsieur de Putange, I knew Monsieur Dujard in England, and I know Monsieur de Treville."
"Monsieur de Treville!" exclaimed the novice. "Do you know Monsieur de Treville?"
"Yes, intimately."
"The captain of the king's musketeers?"
"Yes, the captain of the king's musketeers."
"Oh, then you will see presently that we must be acquaintances, almost friends.
If you know Monsieur de Treville, you must have been at his house.
Often, said her ladyship, who, having entered on this path, and finding falsehood profitable, determined to pursue it to the end.
At his house you must have seen some of his musketeers.
All of them whom he is in the habit of receiving, replied her ladyship, who began to take a real interest in the conversation.
Name some of those that you know, said the novice, and you will see that they are amongst my friends.
Why, said her ladyship, somewhat confused, I know Monsieur de Louvigny, Monsieur de Courtivron, Monsieur de Ferrusac. The novice let her go on, but seeing her pause, said, Do you not know a gentleman named Athos? Her ladyship became as pale as the sheets on which she was reclining, and, mistress as she was of her emotions, she could not help uttering a cry as she seized the hand of the novice and fastened her gaze upon her.
Ah, what is the matter with you? Oh, mon Dieu! Said the poor young woman. Have I said anything to offend you?
No, but I was struck by the name, for I have been acquainted with this gentleman also, and it seemed strange that I should meet with anyone who knew him well.
Oh, yes, very well, and his friends also, Monsieur Porthos and Monsieur Aramis.
Really? And I know them too, exclaimed her ladyship, who felt a cold shudder penetrating to her heart.
Well, if you are acquainted with them, you ought to know that they are good and brave companions. Why do you not apply to them if you want protection?
That is to say, stammered her ladyship, I am not very intimate with any one of them. I know them from having heard them spoken of by one of their friends, Monsieur D'Artagnan.
You know Monsieur D'Artagnan?
Exclaimed the novice, in turn seizing her ladyship's hand and devouring her with her looks. Then, remarking the strange expression of her ladyship's countenance,
Pardon me, madame, you know him, but in what character?
Why, replied her ladyship, in some embarrassment, in the character of a friend.
You deceive me, madame, said the novice. You have been his mistress.
It is you who have been that, said her ladyship, in turn.
I,
said the novice.
Yes, you.
I know you now. You are Madame Bonancieux. The young woman drew herself back, overwhelmed with astonishment and terror.
Oh, do not deny it, but pray answer, said her ladyship. Well, yes, madam, I love him, said the novice. Are we rivals?
Her ladyship's face was irradiated by a light so wild that under any other circumstances Madame Bonancieux would have fled from her in terror. But she was not entirely absorbed by jealousy.
Come, tell me, madame,
said Madame Bonancieux, with an energy of which she would have been thought incapable.
Have you been his mistress?
Oh, no, exclaimed her ladyship, in a tone which prohibited any doubt of her honesty.
Never, never.
I believe you, said Madame Bonancieux.
But why did you cry out so?
What, do you not understand? Said her ladyship, who had already recovered from her confusion and had resumed all her presence of mind.
How should I understand? I know nothing.
Do you not understand that Monsieur D'Artagnan, being my friend, made me his confidant?
Really?
Do you not understand that I am acquainted with everything that has taken place? Your abduction from the little house at Saint-Germain? His despair, that of his friends and their researches ever since that time? Is it strange for me to be astonished on finding myself, without being aware of it, by the side of you of whom we have so often talked together? Of you whom he loves with all the strength of his soul? Of you whom he made me love before I beheld you? Ah, dear Constance, I find you at last I see you.
Her ladyship held out her arms towards Madame Bonancieux, who, convinced by what she had just heard, now saw in this woman, whom she had an instant before regarded as a rival, only a sincere and a devoted friend.
"Oh, pardon me," said she, allowing herself to sink upon her ladyship's shoulder. "I love him so much."
These two women held each other for an instant, thus embraced. Certainly, if her ladyship's strength had been but equal to her hatred, Madame Bonancieux would not have left her arms alive. But not being able to stifle her, she smiled.
"Oh, dear little pretty thing," said her ladyship.
how delighted I am to see you. Let me look at you."
And as she uttered these words, she did in fact devour her with her looks.
"Yes, it is certainly you. Ah, after what he told me of you, I recognize you now. I recognize you perfectly well."
The poor young woman could not suspect the horrid cruelty that was raging behind the ramparts of that unruffled brow, or behind those eyes in which she only read the interest of compassion.
"Then you know what I have suffered," said Madame Bonacieux, "since he has told you what he himself endured. But to suffer for him is a joy."
Her ladyship replied mechanically,
"Yes, it is a joy."
But she was thinking of something else.
"And then," continued Madame Bonacieux, "my punishment draws near its end. Tomorrow, this very evening perhaps, I shall see him once more, and then the past will be forgotten."
"This evening? Tomorrow?" exclaimed her ladyship, aroused from her reverie by these words. "What can you mean? Do you expect to hear anything of him?"
"I expect him himself."
"Himself? D'Artagnan here?"
"Yes, himself."
"But it is impossible. He is at the siege of La Rochelle with the cardinal. He will not return to Paris until after the town is taken."
"You think so? But is there anything impossible to my D'Artagnan, the noble and loyal gentleman?"
"Oh, I cannot believe you."
"Well, then, read,"
said this unfortunate young woman in the excess of her pride and joy, showing a letter to her ladyship.
"The writing of Madame de Chevreuse," said her ladyship to herself. "Ah, I was quite sure that there were some communications in that quarter."
And she eagerly read these lines. "My dear child, be ready. Our friend will soon see you, and he will only come to snatch you from the prison where it was necessary for your own safety to conceal you. So prepare for your departure, and never despair of us. Our brave Gascon has just shown himself as brave and as faithful as ever. Tell him that there is much gratitude to him in a certain quarter for the warning which he gave."
"Yes, yes," said her ladyship. "The letter is very precise. And do you know what this warning was?"
"No, I only suspect that he must have warned the queen of some new machination of the cardinal."
"Yes, that is it, beyond a doubt," said her ladyship, returning the letter, and letting her head fall pensively on her breast.
At that moment the gallop of a horse was heard.
"Oh!"
exclaimed Madame Bonacieux, rushing to the window.
"Can this be he?"
Her ladyship remained in her bed, petrified by the surprise. So many unexpected things had suddenly happened to her that, for the first time, her head failed her.
He,
muttered she.
"And if it should be?"
And she continued in bed, with her eyes fixed on vacancy.
"Alas, no," said Madame Bonacieux. "It is a man whom I do not know. But he seems to be coming here. Yes, he is riding more slowly. He stops at the gate. He rings."
Her ladyship sprang out of the bed.
"You are quite sure that it is not he?"
"Oh, yes, certain."
"Perhaps you do not see him distinctly."
"Oh, should I see only the plume in his hat or the skirt of his cloak, I should not fail to recognize him."
Her ladyship was dressing all the time.
"No matter. The man is coming here, you say?"
"Yes, he has come in."
"It must be either for you or for me."
"Oh, mon Dieu, how agitated you are!"
"Yes, I confess that I have not your confidence. I dread everything from the cardinal."
"Hush," said Madame Bonacieux. "Someone is coming."
The door opened, and the abbess entered.
"Did you come from Boulogne?" demanded she of her ladyship.
"Yes, madame," replied the latter, endeavouring to resume her composure.
"Who wants me?"
"A man who will not give his name, but who comes from the cardinal."
"And who wants to speak to me?" demanded her ladyship.
"Who wants to speak with the lady who has just arrived from Boulogne."
"Then show him in, madame, I beg of you."
"Oh, my God, my God!" said Madame Bonacieux. "Can it be any bad news?"
"I fear so. I leave you with this stranger, but as soon as he shall have gone, I will return, if you will allow me."
"Yes, I beseech you to do so."
The abbess and Madame Bonacieux left the room. Her ladyship remained alone, with her eyes fixed upon the door. A moment afterwards, the jingling sound of spurs was heard on the stairs. Then the steps came nearer, Then the door was opened, and a man appeared. Her ladyship uttered a cry of joy. This man was the Count de Rochefort, the familiar of his eminence. 62. Two kinds of demons. "Ah!" exclaimed both Rochefort and her ladyship at the same instant. "It is you." "Yes, it is I."
"And you come from?"
demanded her ladyship. "From La Rochelle. And you?"
"From England."
"And Buckingham?"
"Is dead, or dangerously wounded. As I was leaving, without having obtained anything from him, a fanatic had just assassinated him."
"Ah," said Rochefort, smiling. "That was a very fortunate chance, which will please his eminence much. Have you informed him of it?"
"I wrote to him from Boulogne. But what brings you here?"
"His eminence, being uneasy, has sent me to look for you."
"I only arrived yesterday."
"And what have you been doing since?"
"I have not been wasting my time."
"Oh, I do not doubt you."
"Do you know whom I have met with here?"
"No."
"Guess."
"How can I?"
"That young woman whom the Queen took from prison."
"What? The mistress of young D'Artagnan?"
"Yes, Madame Bonacieux, whose refuge the Cardinal could not discover."
"Well, then," said Rochefort, "this is a chance quite fit to pair with the other. Verily, the Cardinal is a fortunate man."
"Fancy my astonishment," continued her ladyship, "when I found myself face to face with this woman."
"Does she know you?"
"No."
"Then she looks upon you as a stranger?" Her ladyship smiled.
"I am her dearest friend."
"Upon my honour," said Rochefort, "my dear Countess, it is only you who can perform this sort of miracles."
"And well it is that I can, Chevalier," said her ladyship. "For do you know what is about to happen?"
"No."
"They are coming for her tomorrow, or the next day, with an order from the Queen."
"Really? And who do you mean by they?"
"D'Artagnan and his friends."
"Verily, they will go such a length that we shall be obliged to put them into the Bastille."
"And why has it not been done already?"
"How can I tell? Because the Cardinal evinces a weakness towards these men which I cannot comprehend."
"Really? Well then, tell him this, Rochefort. Tell him that our conversation at the Red Dovecot was overheard by these four men. Tell him that after his departure, one of them came up and took from me by force the passport he had given me. Tell him that they gave Lord de Winter notice of my voyage to England, that this time again they nearly prevented the success of my undertaking, as they did in the affair of the diamond studs. Tell him that amongst these four men, only two are to be feared, D'Artagnan and Athos. Tell him that the third, Aramis, is the lover of Madame de Chevreuse. He must be allowed to live, for his secret is known, and he may be made useful. And as for the fourth, Porthos, he is a fool, a fop, a ninny, not worth giving oneself the smallest trouble about."
"But these four men ought to be at this moment at the siege of La Rochelle."
"I thought so too, but a letter which Madame Bonacieux has received from Madame de Chevreuse, and which she had the imprudence to communicate to me, leads me to believe that these four men are now on their way to abduct her."
"The devil! What must we do?"
"What did the Cardinal say to you about me?"
"That I was to take your dispatches, whether verbal or written, and to return by post. When he knows what you have done, he will give you further directions."
"I must remain here, then?"
"Here or in the neighbourhood."
"You cannot take me with you?"
"No. The order is explicit. In the environs of the camp you might be recognized, and you can understand that your presence might compromise his eminence, especially after what has just happened in England. Only tell me beforehand where you will await the Cardinal's orders, that I may know where to find you."
"Listen, it is very probable that I cannot remain here."
"Why?"
"You forget that my enemies may arrive at any moment."
"True, but then this little woman will escape his eminence."
"Bah!"
said her ladyship, with a smile peculiar to herself.
"You forget that I am her best friend."
"Ah, there is something in that. Then I may tell the Cardinal with regard to this woman..."
"That he may make himself easy."
"Is that all? Will he know what that means?"
"He will guess it."
And now let us see, what ought I to do? You must set off this instant. It appears to me that the news you carry is well worth the trouble of a little haste.
My carriage broke down on entering Lillier.
Excellent.
What do you mean by excellent?
Why, that I want your carriage.
And how am I to travel, then?
On post horses.
You talk of it very unconcernedly. 180 leagues.
What do they signify?
Well, it shall be done. What next?
On passing through Lillier, you will send your carriage to me, with directions to your lackey to attend to my commands.
Very well.
You have, no doubt, some order from the Cardinal in your possession?
Yes, I have my full powers.
You will show that to the abbess, and you will tell her that I shall be sent for either today or tomorrow, and that I must accompany the person sent in your name.
Very well.
Do not forget to speak harshly of me when you talk to the abbess.
Why so?
I am one of the Cardinal's victims. I must inspire some confidence in that poor little Madame Bonancieux.
Right.
And now will you make me a report of all that has occurred? I have already told you the events, and you have a good memory. So repeat what I have told you. A paper may be lost.
You are right. Only let me know where you are to be found, that I may not have to run about the country in vain.
Ah, there is something in that. Wait.
Do you require a map?
Oh, I know this country well.
You? When did you ever visit it?
I was brought up here.
Indeed?
It is some advantage, you see, to have been brought up somewhere.
You will wait for me, then?
Let me consider a moment. Ah, yes, at Armentières.
And where is Armentières?
It is a little village on the Lys. I shall only have to cross the river, and I shall be in another country.
Capital! But you must remember that you are only to cross the river in case of danger.
That is understood.
And in that case, how shall I discover where you are?
You do not want your servant? Is he one on whom you can depend?
Entirely.
Give him to me. No one knows him. I will leave him at the place I quit, and he will conduct you to me.
And you say that you will wait for me at Armentières?
Yes, at Armentières.
Write the name for me on a slip of paper, lest I should forget it. The name of a village will not compromise anyone, will it?
Ah, who knows? But never mind, said her ladyship, writing the name on a half sheet of paper. I will run the hazard.
Good, said Rochefort, taking from her ladyship's hands the paper, which he folded and stuffed into the lining of his hat. And I shall, besides, do like the children, and, as a safeguard against the loss of the paper, I shall repeat the name all the way I go. Now, is that all?
I think so.
Let us see. Buckingham dead, or grievously wounded. Your conversation with the Cardinal, overheard by the musketeers. Lord de Winter warned of your arrival at Portsmouth. D'Artagnan and Athos to the Bastille. Aramis, the lover of Madame de Chevreuse. Porthos a fool, Madame Bonancieux discovered, to send you the carriage as soon as possible, to put my lackey under your orders, to make you out a victim of the Cardinal, that the abbess may have no suspicion, Armentières, on the banks of the Lys. Is that right?
Verily, my dear Chevalier, you are a miracle of memory. But by the way, add one thing.
And what is that?
I saw some very pretty woods, which must join the gardens of the convent. Say that I may be allowed to walk in these woods. Who knows? I may perhaps be obliged to escape by some back door.
You think of everything,
and you forget one thing.
What is that?
To ask me whether I want any money.
Exactly. How much will you have?
All the gold you may have about you.
I have nearly 500 pistoles.
I have about as many. With 1,000 pistoles, one may face anything. Empty your pockets.
There.
Excellent. And when do you set off?
In 1 hour. Just time enough to eat a morsel, whilst I send to fetch a post-horse.
Excellent. Adieu, Count.
Adieu, Countess.
My compliments to the Cardinal.
My compliments to Satan.
Her ladyship and Rochefort exchanged smiles and separated. In an hour afterwards, Rochefort set out at full speed. And 5 hours afterwards he passed through Arras. Our readers already know how he was recognized by D'Artagnan,
and how that recognition, by exciting the fears of our four musketeers, had given a new activity to their journey. 63. A drop of water. Scarcely had Rochefort left before Madame Bonancieux returned. She found her ladyship with a smiling countenance.
"Well," said the young woman, "what you feared has happened. This evening or tomorrow the cardinal will send for you."
"How do you know that?" asked her ladyship.
"I heard it from the lips of the messenger himself."
"Come and sit down by me," said her ladyship. "But first, let me be sure that no one overhears us."
"And why all these precautions?"
"You will soon know." Her ladyship arose, went to the door, opened it, looked along the corridor, and then came back and seated herself again by the side of Madame Bonancieux.
"Then," said she again, "he played his part well."
"Who did?"
"He who introduced himself to the abbess as the envoy of the cardinal."
"Was it then a part that he was playing?"
"Yes, my child."
"Then that man is not—"
"That man," said her ladyship, dropping her voice, "is my brother."
"Your brother?"
exclaimed Madame Bonancieux. "Nobody but you knows this secret, my child. If you should entrust it to anybody in the world, I should be ruined, and you also, perhaps."
"Oh, mon Dieu!"
"Listen. This is what has taken place. My brother, who was coming to my aid, to take me away from here, by force if necessary, met the cardinal's emissary, who was on his way to fetch me. He followed me. On arriving at a retired and solitary spot, he drew his sword and commanded the messenger to deliver to him the papers which he carried. The messenger endeavored to defend himself, and my brother slew him."
"Oh!"
said Madame Bonancieux, shuddering.
"There was no alternative, remember. My brother then determined to make use of craft instead of force. He took the papers, presented himself here as the emissary of the cardinal himself, and, in an hour or two, a carriage will come to take me away in his eminence's name."
"I understand. It is your brother who will send this carriage."
"Of course. But that is not all. That letter which you have received, and which you believe to be from Madame de Chevreuse—"
"Well?"
"Is a forgery."
"What?"
"Yes, a forgery. It is a snare, that you may make no resistance when they come to fetch you."
"But it is D'Artagnan who will come."
"Undeceive yourself. D'Artagnan and his friends are at the siege of La Rochelle."
"How do you know that?"
"My brother met with some of the cardinal's agents, disguised in the uniform of musketeers. They were to call you out to the gate. You would have believed that you were in the company of friends, and they were to carry you off and convey you to Paris."
"Oh, my God! My head fails in the midst of such a chaos of iniquities. I feel that if it lasts long,"
said Madame Bonancieux, putting her hands to her head,
"I shall go mad."
"Listen, I hear the step of a horse. It is that of my brother who is going away. I must take a last farewell of him. Come."
Her ladyship opened the window and made a sign to Madame Bonancieux to join her. The young woman joined her, and Rochefort passed by at a gallop.
"Goodbye, brother,"
said her ladyship.
The Chevalier raised his head, saw the two young women, and, as he went rapidly past, made a friendly farewell salute with his hand.
"That kind George,"
said she, closing the window, with an expression of countenance full of affection and melancholy. She then returned and sat down in her place, as though plunged in reflections of a personal kind.
"Dear lady," said Madame Bonancieux, "pardon me for interrupting you, but what do you advise me to do? You have more experience than I have. Speak, and I will listen."
"In the first place," said her ladyship, "I might possibly be deceived, and D'Artagnan and his friends may really be coming to your assistance."
"Oh, that would be too fortunate," said Madame Bonancieux, "and I fear that so much happiness is not reserved for me."
"Then, do you see, it would be merely a question of time, a kind of race, as to which would arrive first. If it should be your friends who made best haste, why then you would be saved. But if it were the cardinal's satellites, then you would be ruined."
"Oh, yes, yes, ruined without mercy. But what must I do? What must I do?"
"There is one very simple and very natural plan."
"And what is that? Tell me."
"It would be to wait, concealed in the neighborhood, and so to make yourself sure who the men were who came to seek you."
"But where can I wait?"
Oh, that is not a matter of difficulty. I myself must wait and conceal myself at a few leagues' distance from here until my brother comes to meet me. Well, then, I will take you with me. We will hide and wait together. But I shall not be allowed to leave this place. I am almost regarded as a prisoner here. As it is supposed that I leave on account of an order from the cardinal, it will not be believed that you are very anxious to follow me. Well, very well. The carriage being at the door, you will bid me adieu, and you will get upon the steps to embrace me for the last time. My brother's servant, who is coming to fetch me, being forewarned, will give a signal to the postillion, and we shall set off at full gallop. But D'Artagnan, if he should come, shall we not know it? How? Nothing is more easy. We will send this servant of my brother's, in whom I have told you that I have the greatest confidence, back to Béthune, and he shall disguise himself and find a lodging opposite the convent. If it should be the cardinal's emissaries who come, he will not stir. If it should be Monsieur D'Artagnan and his friends, he will lead them to where we are. He knows them, then? Certainly. Has he not seen Monsieur D'Artagnan at my house? Oh, yes, yes, you are right. Thus all will go on well. But do not let us go too far away from here. 7 or 8 leagues at the most. We will keep upon the frontiers, and upon the first alarm, quit France. What must we do in the meantime? Wait. But if they should come, my brother's carriage will arrive before them. Suppose I should be away from you when it arrives, at dinner or at supper, for example. Tell our good abbess that in order that we may be as little apart as possible, you request her to allow you to take your meals with me. Will she permit it? What objection can there be to it? Go down now to her and make your request. I feel my head a little heavy, and so I shall take a turn in the garden. And where may I see you again? Here, in 1 hour from this time. Here, in 1 hour. Oh, you are very kind, and I thank you. How should I avoid being interested in you? Even if you had not been beautiful and charming, are you not the friend of one of my best friends? Dear D'Artagnan! Oh, how he will thank you! I hope so. Come, it is all arranged. Let us go down. You are going to the garden? Proceed along this corridor. A little staircase leads you to it. Good. Thank you.
And the two ladies separated, exchanging charming smiles. Her ladyship had spoken the truth. Her head was heavy, for her projects, badly arranged, clashed against each other as in chaos. She had need to be alone that she might put a little order into her ideas. She saw dimly into the future, but it required some moments of silence and tranquillity to give to this confused assemblage of conceptions a definite form and a decided plan. What was now most urgent was to carry off Madame Bonancieux and put her in a place of security, and then, should her game fail, to use her as a hostage. Her ladyship began to dread the issue of this terrible duel, in which her enemies were quite as persevering as she herself was unrelenting. Besides, she felt, as one feels the approach of a storm, that the issue was near and would not fail to be fearful. The principal point for her was, as we have said, to get possession of Madame Bonancieux. By this means she would hold in her hands the life of D'Artagnan, or more even than his life, for she would hold that of the woman he loved. In case of unprosperous fortune, it was a means of opening negotiations and of securing favorable terms. Now it was certain that Madame Bonancieux would follow her without distrust. And let Madame Bonancieux be but once concealed with her at Armentières, it would be easy to make her believe that D'Artagnan had never visited Béthune. In a fortnight, at most, Rochefort would return. During that time she would meditate on what she must do to avenge herself on the four friends. She should not be impatient, for she should have the sweetest occupation that events can ever give to a woman of her character, a hearty vengeance to complete. Whilst thus meditating, she cast her eyes around her, and mapped out in her mind the topography of the garden. Her ladyship was like a good general, who foresees at the same time both victory and defeat, and who is quite ready, according to the chances of the battle, either to advance or to retire. At the expiration of an hour, she heard a soft voice calling her. It was that of Madame Bonancieux. The good abbess had consented to everything, and, to begin, they were just about to sup together. On entering the court, they heard the sound of a carriage, which was stopping at the gate. Her ladyship listened. "Do you hear?"
said she.
"Yes, the rolling of a carriage. It is that which my brother sends for us. Oh, mon Dieu! Come, have courage."
There was a ring at the convent gate. Her ladyship was not mistaken.
"Go up into your room," said she to Madame Bonacieux. "You must have some trinkets that you would like to carry with you." "I have D'Artagnan's letters," replied she. "Well, go for them, and come back to me in my room. We will sup hastily, for as we shall perhaps have to travel a part of the night, we must recruit our strength." "Great God!" said Madame Bonacieux, placing her hands upon her heart. "I am choking. I cannot walk." "Courage! Come, take courage! Think that in a quarter of an hour you will be safe, and think that what you are about to do is done for his sake." "Oh, yes, all for him. You have restored my courage by that single word. Go, I will rejoin you."
Her ladyship went hastily up to her own room, where she found Rochefort's valet, and gave him his instructions. He was to wait for her at the gate. If, by chance, the musketeers should arrive, he was to go off at a gallop, make the circuit of the convent, and wait for her at a little village which was situated on the other side of the wood. In that case, her ladyship would walk through the garden and reach the village on foot. We have already said that she was perfectly well acquainted with this part of France. If the musketeers should not make their appearance, everything would be conducted as had been previously arranged. Madame Bonacieux was to get into the carriage on the pretext of wishing her once more adieu, and she would then escape with her. Madame Bonacieux came in, and to remove all suspicion, if she had any, her ladyship repeated to the valet, in her presence, the latter part of his instructions. Her ladyship then made some inquiries about the carriage. It was a chaise, drawn by three horses, and driven by a postillion. The valet was to precede it as a courier. Her ladyship was altogether wrong in fearing that suspicion troubled Madame Bonacieux. The poor young woman was too honest herself to suspect another of so black a perfidy. Besides, the name of Lady de Winter, which she had heard mentioned by the abbess, was entirely unknown to her, and she had not imagined that a woman had performed so large and fatal a part in bringing about the misfortunes of her life. "You see," said her ladyship, when the valet had left the room, "that everything is ready. The abbess has not the slightest suspicion, and fully believes that I am sent for by the cardinal. The man has gone out to give his final orders. Eat something, however little. Drink a thimbleful of wine, and let us be off." "Yes," said Madame Bonacieux mechanically. "Yes, let us be off." Her ladyship made her a sign to sit down, poured out for her a small glass of Spanish wine, and helped her to a part of the breast of a chicken.
"There," said she, "everything is propitious. Here is the night approaching. At daybreak we shall have reached his retreat, and no one will suspect where we are. Come, have courage, and take something."
Madame Bonacieux ate two or three mouthfuls, mechanically, and just put her lips to the wine.
"Come, come," said her ladyship, lifting her own glass towards her mouth. "Do as I do."
But at the moment she was about to drink, her hand was suddenly arrested. Her ears caught the distant sound of an approaching gallop on the road. And then, almost at the same instant, she seemed to hear the neighing of horses. This sound destroyed her exultation, as the uproar of a storm awakens us from a delightful dream. She grew pale and ran to the window, whilst Madame Bonacieux, who had got up, trembled so as to be obliged to support herself with a chair for fear of falling. Nothing had become yet visible, but the galloping was more distinctly heard.
"Oh, my God!" said Madame Bonacieux. "What can that noise be?"
"That of our friends or our enemies," said her ladyship, with a terrible composure. "Remain where you are, and I will go and ascertain." Madame Bonacieux remained standing, mute, motionless, and pale as a statue. The sound became more audible. The horses could not be more than 150 yards off, but were not yet visible on account of a turning in the road. Still, the noise was now so distinct that the number of the horses might have been counted by the clattering of their iron hoofs. Her ladyship gazed with the most intense attention. There was just light enough to recognize those who were approaching. Suddenly, at the turn of the road, she saw the glitter of laced hats and the waving of plumes. She counted 2, then 5, then 8 horsemen. One of them was 2 lengths in advance of his companions. Her ladyship gave utterance to a howl. In the foremost rider she recognized D'Artagnan.
"Oh, mon Dieu, exclaimed Madame Bonacieux. "What is the matter?"
"'It is the uniform of the Cardinal's guards. "'There is not a moment to be lost,' exclaimed her ladyship. "'Let us fly! Let us fly!' "'Yes, yes, let us fly!' repeated Madame Bonancieux, "'but without the power of moving one step, "'rooted as she was to her place by terror. "'The horsemen were heard passing under the window. "'Come along! Come along!' said her ladyship, "'endeavouring to drag the young woman by the arm. "'Thanks to the garden we may yet escape, "'for I have got the key.' "'But let us make haste. "'In less than 5 minutes it will be too late.' "'Madame Bonancieux attempted to walk, "'but after taking 2 steps fell upon her knees. "'Her ladyship attempted to lift her up and carry her, "'but she found herself unable. "'At this moment they heard the wheels of the carriage, "'which, on the appearance of the musketeers, "'went off at a gallop, "'and then 3 or 4 shots resounded. "'For the last time will you come?' exclaimed her ladyship. "'Oh, my God, you see that my strength is all gone. "'You see that I cannot walk. "'Fly and save yourself. "'Fly alone? Leave you here? "'No, no, never!' exclaimed her ladyship. "'Suddenly a livid lightning flashed from her eyes. "'She ran to the table and poured into Madame Bonacieux's glass "'the contents of the hollow part of a ring, "'which she opened with singular dexterity. "'It was a red particle, which was immediately dissolved.' Then, taking the glass with a firm hand, "'Drink!' said she hastily. "'This wine will give you strength. Drink!' She put the glass to the lips of the young woman, who drank mechanically. "'Ah, it was not thus that I wished to avenge myself,' said her ladyship, putting the glass upon the table with an infernal smile. "'But, Faith, we must do the best we can.' And she rushed out of the room. Madame Bonancieux saw her escape without being able to follow her. She was like those who dream that they are pursued, yet feel a perfect inability to move. A few minutes elapsed, and then a frightful noise was heard at the gate. At every instant Madame Bonancieux expected to see the reappearance of her ladyship, but she did not return. Many times, from terror no doubt, the cold drops stood upon her burning brow. At length she heard the rattling of the grated doors, which were being opened. The noise of boots and spurs resounded on the stairs, and there was a loud murmur of many approaching voices, in the midst of which she fancied that she heard her own name mentioned. Suddenly she uttered a loud scream of joy, and rushed towards the door. She had recognized the voice of D'Artagnan.
"'D'Artagnan! D'Artagnan!' she exclaimed. "'Is it you? Here! Here!'
"'Constance! Constance!' replied the young man. "'Mon Dieu, where are you?' At the same moment the door of the cell was burst in, rather than opened. Many men rushed into the room. Madame Bonancieux had fallen on a chair without the power of motion. D'Artagnan cast away a still-smoking pistol, which he held in his hand, and fell upon his knees before his mistress. Athos replaced his pistol in his belt, and Porthos and Aramis returned the swords which they had drawn into their sheaths.
"'Oh, D'Artagnan! My beloved D'Artagnan! You come at last! You did not deceive me! It is really you!'
"'Yes, yes, Constance, we are at last united.
"'Oh, she told me in vain that you would never come. "'I always secretly expected it. "'I did not wish to fly. "'Oh, how wisely I have chosen, how happy I am!'
"'At this word, she, Athos, who had quietly sat down, suddenly arose. "'She? Who is she?' demanded D'Artagnan.
"'Why, my companion!' "'She who, through affection for me, wished to withdraw me from my persecutors. "'She who, taking you for the cardinal's guards, has just fled.'
"'Your companion!' exclaimed D'Artagnan, becoming paler than the white veil of his mistress. "'Of what companion are you talking?'
"'Of her whose carriage was at the door. "'Of a woman who called herself your friend, D'Artagnan. "'Of a woman to whom you confided all our secrets.'
"'Her name?' exclaimed D'Artagnan. "'Do you not know her name?'
"'Yes, I do. They mentioned it before me. Wait. But it is very strange. Oh, my God, my head becomes confused. I cannot see anything.'
"'Come here, my friends, come here! Her hands are icy!' exclaimed D'Artagnan.
"'She is very ill! Great God! She is becoming unconscious!'
Whilst Porthos was calling for help with all the power of his lungs, Aramis ran for a glass of water. But he stopped on beholding the fearful alteration in the countenance of Athos, who was standing before the table with his hair on end and his features frozen with terror, looking into one of the glasses and seeming to be a prey to the most horrible suspicion. "'Oh,' said Athos, "'oh, no, it is impossible. Such a crime would never be permitted by the Almighty. "'Some water! Some water!' cried D'Artagnan. "'Some water!'
Oh, poor woman, poor woman, murmured Athos in a faltering voice. Madame Bonancieux opened her eyes once more at the caresses of D'Artagnan,